This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Joe Palca in Washington, sitting in for Neil Conan. One of the most exciting developments in the last decade has been the isolation of human embryonic stem cells. Scientists say these cells can, in theory, be used to treat a variety of diseases, from diabetes to Alzheimer's. But the research is controversial. To get these cells, you must first destroy an embryo. President Bush has placed strict limits on the use of federal funds for embryonic stem cell research. However, some political and religious conservatives are supporting the research because of its potential for therapy. This weekend, former First Lady Nancy Reagan, whose husband, former President Ronald Reagan, has Alzheimer's disease, publicly announced her support for stem cell research. And last month, 206 members of the House of Representatives, including 36 Republicans, signed a letter urging the president to reevaluate the restrictions he placed on this research. This hour on Talk of the Nation, we'll explore the science and the politics of stem cell research. Later in the program, we'll talk about the political controversy surrounding Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld. The Washington Post's Thomas Ricks and Time Magazine's Michael Duffy will join us. But first, embryonic stem cell research. What questions do you have about the science involved in obtaining these cells? How do you weigh the promise they hold for curing disease against the moral questions involved in how they are obtained? Join the conversation. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email is totn@npr.org. Joining us now is Larry Goldstein, professor of cellular and molecular medicine at the University of California in San Diego School of Medicine. He's with us from member station KPBS in San Diego. Welcome to the program, Dr. Goldstein.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
It's good to talk to you. So I guess we should start by asking you to remind us about the discovery in 1998 of human embryonic stem cells. First of all, what are they? And second of all, why were scientists so excited when these cells were discovered?
Well, I think the thing to remember is that our bodies are made of cells, and most of the cells in our body, in an adult body, are highly specialized, like small businesses. So cells in our pancreas make insulin, and cells in the brain make electrical signals. And what stem cells are cells that can divide to make more stem cells, or can, if you give them appropriate signals, make those specialized cells. Now, in 1998, Jamie Thompson and subsequently some other laboratory groups were able to grow for the first time pluripotent or embryonic, as they're called sometimes, stem cells from humans. And the reason these cells are so important is that in some ways they're, in scientists' views at least, most promising in being able to make all the different cell types in an adult.
And why would you want that? I mean, wouldn't it be enough, like, for example, I as I understand it, you need these cells so you can get more nerve cells if you're trying to repair damaged nerve cells. But why not just take nerve cells and grow them and then put them back into somebody?
Well, so, I mean, there are two reasons. One is that the challenges of obtaining and then growing human neurons or cells that can make human neurons from an adult person are really quite substantial. They can be grown under some circumstances, but there aren't lots of donors lining up to donate their neurons to us. Perhaps you'd like to be a donor.
No, that's all right. I'll pass. Thank you. Some days, maybe, but not today.
Yeah, right. Whereas the thing about these these pluripotent stem cells from early in human development is that they will grow quite substantially under relatively well-controlled conditions, and so you can end up with quite a large number of them. And then, as methods get worked out for instructing them to do different things, the hope is that we can instruct them to make, for example, dopaminergic neurons that are missing in people with Parkinson's disease, or beta cells that are missing in juvenile diabetes to help kids who have that disease. And so that's why there's so much excitement and promise of the science.
But whence the controversy? Is it in a nutshell that these cells have to be obtained initially, at least, by destroying an embryo?
That's where the ethical and moral controversy, and unfortunately the political controversy, is that to the best of our knowledge and understanding at this point in time, the best place, perhaps the only place, to get truly pluripotent cells is from an early stage of human development called the blastocyst, when the human embryo or pre-embryo, depending on who you talk to, is a little ball of about 200 cells. And those cells, when extracted and treated properly, can or already have, in fact, that property of pluripotency.
Right.
And can grow.
Right. Now,
so that's where the ethical problem is. The scientific issues are pretty straightforward, actually, in some ways.
Yeah. Now, 1998, President Clinton is president, and he sees this discovery, and he says, gee, I think maybe this is something that the federal government should spend its money on. I know we can't actually derive embryonic stem cells because that's a violation of federal laws, and we won't get into that. But maybe if somebody else derived them, we could spend federal money to do research on them. So he starts putting in place this mechanism that would allow research. But then the election comes, and President Bush comes into office, and he says, hold everything. I'm going to think through this policy. And then on August 9th, 2001, he announced his policy. What was that?
Well, his policy was that all cell lines or all groups of cells that had been generated in the laboratory before August 9th, that is where the blastocysts or embryos had been destroyed before August 9th, those were eligible for federal funding. But cell lines that were generated on August 10th, 2001, August 11th, 2001, those were not and are not currently eligible for federal funding.
And the idea, I guess, as the president articulated it then, was he said the life and death decision about these embryos had already been made.
Had already been made in that sense on August 9th, 2001. I'll just add, though, that let's remember that in a treatment called in vitro fertilization, IVF, when couples are generating embryos to try to start pregnancy, embryos are created and, you know, we can argue the merits of it, but in fact destroyed or frozen indefinitely every day in this country. So the decision to limit funding for the research has not really changed the fact that embryos are continually being generated and destroyed in IVF. Many of them, several hundred thousand perhaps, are sitting around in freezers in the United States. And, you know, many scientists, myself included, would like to see embryos that are not destined to initiate a pregnancy to be used for research to try to help people.
So when the president said, OK, I will allow this limited, albeit limited, amount of research on embryonic stem cells with federal money, what was the reaction? Were people happy to have some funding or dismayed that they weren't getting more?
Well, I can't speak for everybody, but I can speak for myself. And I thought it was sort of a good news, bad news thing. You know, the great news, the wonderful thing that the president did was to open up federal funding for this important area of research. And research money has begun to be allocated from the NIH to scientists around the country to study some of those initial lines. The bad news was the limits that were put in place because of two things, really. One is that there have turned out not to be nearly as many lines as the president thought were going to be available on August 9th. So there are many fewer materials to work with, and they're somewhat harder to get. And that then leads to the second point, which is by restricting when and where lines could be gotten, a limited monopoly, in essence, was set up so that whoever happened to have cells that were generated before August 9th, they could set whatever conditions they wanted to. They might give them, they might not. They could ask whatever amount of money they wanted for them. And it's created a bit of a conundrum in the field about how to cope with this.
We're talking about embryonic stem cells, and we'd like it if you join the conversation in Washington. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And let's take a call. Ben in Denver, Colorado, welcome to the program.
Hi. I am all for embryonic stem cell research, and what I'm curious about is two things. One is, once the stem cell line has been created, do you even have to think about cloning, or does it just, under proper conditions, replicate itself? And the other is, does the doctor who's on the show today know what the status is on doing stem cell research for juvenile diabetes and a cure for that disease?
Interesting questions.
Yeah, Ben, those are both very good questions. Well, so cell lines, once they're derived, will continue to grow. Perhaps not indefinitely, but for long periods of time, and will maintain their genetic makeup. They're relatively stable, and so
okay.
They can be continued. Although you should realize that if somebody completely unrelated to you were to, a blastocyst that was unrelated to you, generate that cell line, you might or might not be able to accept that for a transplant because you might reject it, as you might reject a kidney from somebody unrelated to you or bone marrow unrelated to you. The second question you asked was about juvenile diabetes, and there's really tremendous promise there. I was at this fundraiser on Saturday where Ann Seidel, a woman in Texas, has had an unusual procedure sometimes referred to as the Edmonton Protocol, where she was able to get a transplant of beta cells from donor pancreases. Mm-hmm. The problem, of course, is that – and she's really – pretty healthy, although she's on immunosuppressive drugs, of course, since they were unrelated to her. The wonderful news about that is that the procedure appears to work. She's off insulin. She's healthy. She's happy.
Really?
The bad news is that it takes three donor pancreases to transplant one recipient, and there just are nowhere near enough donor organs. And so, nor would you want there to be enough donor organs, I think.
Right.
We'd all have to die in car crashes to provide them.
But the idea is – oh, go ahead.
So the idea is to try to use embryonic stem cells to learn enough about how to make beta cells or get them to proliferate or what have you, that you could get around this supply problem. And so I think the surgical methods and the sort of proof of concept is there. What's missing is a supply of those beta cells from somewhere.
Ben, thanks very much for the call. It does raise the question, though. I mean, this is a theoretical use. I mean, it may turn out, as we learn more about embryonic stem cells, that for whatever reason, they wouldn't be as good as pancreatic cells taken from a donor pancreas.
Oh, that's absolutely a good point. I mean, the thing about science and research is we don't know what we don't know. And so what we discover tomorrow may tell us that this will either be much better than we expected or perhaps worse. But the only guarantee in this business is that if you don't do the work, you never will know. And so the argument for research is to proceed and learn enough to really evaluate whether it's going to work and to try to do everything in our power to help these people.
We have an email here from Daniel Reed who says, stem cells can be obtained from adults. What's the difference between embryonic stem cells and stem cells obtained from an adult? I guess we've sort of touched on that, but that's an important point in this debate.
It's an enormously important point, although it's probably more important in the political and ethical debate than in the scientific debate. So from a scientist's perspective, there are stem cells from adults. They have many capacities. So cells from bone marrow can make blood cells and immune cells. And there are these embryonic stem cells, which appear to be able to make any cell type. The scientific literature, I think, would lead to an educated opinion that embryonic stem cells have the greatest promise in terms of making the most different cell types. But that said, there are data and there's proof of principle that adult stem cells can be very useful in a variety of different situations. And most experts, most scientific societies come down squarely on recommending that research with both be pursued. You wouldn't want to pursue one to the exclusion of the other. They both have a tremendous amount to tell us and teach us about the treatment of disease and the understanding of disease. And, you know, the prediction would be that, you know, some years out, some will be better for one thing as opposed to another. Where the science has been somewhat controversial and misused, in my opinion, by participants in the moral and ethical debate is some people would like to say that the scientific literature is very solid on the point that adult stem cells could take the place of embryonic stem cells. And the scientific data for that supposition just aren't very strong. In fact, they're really quite weak.
So you would say that the idea is to keep pursuing all things. I mean, is for example, adult stem cells being neglected for favor of embryonic stem cells in some circumstances?
Absolutely not. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of work on adult stem cells going on in this country. Some of it is very high quality, and some of it really has led to important treatment of disease.
Okay, we need
but
to take it.
Oh, it can't do everything.
Right.
Well, it just can't do everything.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're talking about embryonic stem cells. When we come back from a short break, two congressmen share their views. You can send us email. The address is totn@npr.org or call us 800-989-TALK. No, that's not right. 1-800-989-TALK. Getting my email and my phone mail mixed up. I'm Joe Palca. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Joe Palca in Washington. We're talking about the policy and politics of embryonic stem cell research. What questions or concerns do you have about the science and the ethics? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-TALK. Our email is totn@npr.org. Our guest is Larry Goldstein, professor of cellular and molecular medicine at the University of California School of Medicine. And on Saturday night, and Dr. Goldstein mentioned that he was actually at this event, former First Lady Nancy Reagan spoke at a fundraiser for the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation, where she announced her support for stem cell research.
Those with Alzheimer's are on a rocky path that only goes downhill. Ronnie's long journey has finally taken him to a distant place where I can... Those with Alzheimer's are on a rocky path that only goes downhill. Ronnie's long journey has finally taken him to a distant place where I can no longer reach him. We can't share the wonderful memories of our 52 years together, and I think that's probably the hardest part. And because of this, I'm determined to do what I can to save other families from this pain. And now science has presented us with a hope called stem cell research, which may provide our scientists with many answers they have for so long been beyond our grasp. I just don't see how we can turn our backs on this. There are so many diseases that can be cured or at least helped. We've lost so much time already, and I just really can't bear to lose any more.
Former First Lady Nancy Reagan speaking over the weekend at a fundraiser for the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation. Joining us now on the line is Congressman Christopher Shays, Republican of Connecticut. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Joe.
This was the first time, as far as I understand it, that Nancy Reagan spoke publicly about her views. She's seen as a powerful voice in Republican circles. What effect do you think her speech will have on other politicians who may be considering their position on this issue?
Well, I think it's huge. We knew basically that Nancy Reagan had whispered in the president's ear, but we don't have that capability. And we need the president to recognize that to be... so-called pro-life or anti-choice, depending on one's perspective, does not mean that we should not allow for embryos to be used in stem cell research. We're going to throw them away anyway.
I see. You were one of, I think it was 206 members of Congress, both Democrats and Republicans, who signed a letter last month asking President Bush to review the policies that he set forward in August 9th of 2001. Why did you sign that letter?
Well, because we believe that stem cell research is absolutely essential. And we know this. It's going to happen. Is it going to happen in the United States with our scientists and our technology? Or is this all going to go overseas, and are we going to lose the best and the brightest to overseas research? I mean, we really believe that there will be some significant breakthroughs.
Have you had any sign from the president that he's willing to have this discussion?
You know, not at this time we haven't. I think what the challenge for the president, and it happens sometimes, you try to fix your basic, your own principles, obviously, and your ideology to a new challenge, and it's just not fitting right. It's not working the way the president had thought it might, and he needs to reappraise it.
Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. We're talking about embryonic stem cells. And let's go to Paul in Norwood, Massachusetts. Paul, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. And first, let me state that I agree that we should continue or commence the embryonic stem cell research. My question, I think you've touched on the answer. My wife received the stem cell of transplant of her own stem cells. And I'm wondering, I did hear what you said, but I'm wondering... why that isn't the ultimate solution?
Well, perhaps we can spare Congressman Shays from performing the scientific explanation there and go to Dr. Goldstein if he's on the line and help us out here.
Sure. Well, it depends on what stem cells we're talking about from your wife, Paul. If they were cells from her bone marrow, those cells are probably very good at making new cells of the blood and the immune system. But if she's trying to be treated for Parkinson's disease or diabetes or heart failure or a number of other diseases, multiple myeloma, so she's probably you know, I'm not a clinician, an oncologist, and so
blood cell.
Yeah, yeah. So bone marrow transplant is wonderful for replacement of blood lineages, and it's very important in leukemia, lymphoma, and a number of other diseases like that. And that's terrific, but it's not going to be so good, we think, for Parkinson's or Alzheimer's or diabetes or things like that. So very good but limited would be
my
point.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Paul, thank you for the call. Congressman Shays, I wonder, you know, is this a big issue for your constituents? Is this something that would come up in any of your election discussions?
You know, it hasn't shown up a lot in the dialogue in my election, but I do think it's the Achilles heel of the president. I think it's an area where he has to really realize that to be pro-life should not mean that someone is against using unfertilized material. And I think that, you know, to have someone like Nancy Reagan voice her concern, and I've just known so many others who are pro-life, who simply realize that this is an issue about saving lives. So it's kind of a trap I think the pro-life movement has gotten itself in, and I just don't think it should continue.
Well, maybe Dr. Goldstein, you can help me clear up a point. I mean, just to be fair, this is fertilized material that we begin with here. This is an embryo where an egg and sperm have come together to create something that, in theory at least, could go on to be a human being. Isn't that right?
Yes. If we're talking about excess blastocysts or embryos from IVF treatment, that's absolutely the result of fertilization of an egg cell by a sperm cell, development for a few days, and then they're either implanted to start a pregnancy or they go into the freezer or are destroyed.
I see. Congressman Shays, could this become, do you think, a political issue for the presidential campaign? I mean, you mentioned that it's not on the president's radar. Do you think it would be a mistake for him to try to?
That's partly my concern, I appreciate being corrected on this issue, because the bottom line, though, is that it's not an issue now, but I think it will be, because there are just too many people who know that this research is going to happen in different parts of the world. They know it has tremendous possibility of success, and yet we are just tying our hands and not allowing ourselves to move forward, and so it could be very costly.
Congressman Shays, thanks very much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Congressman Shays is a Republican of Connecticut, and he spoke to us on the line from Bridgeport. Joining us now is Congressman Dave Weldon, Republican of Florida, who's also a medical doctor. Welcome to the program, Dr. Weldon.
It's great to be with you, Joe.
Now, you oppose the expansion of the current federal policy concerning stem cell research. You think the president's limits are appropriate. Tell us why.
Well, my major position is that if this has all the great promise that its proponents claim it has, that the private sector should come rushing in and fund this research. The reason it's been objected to by so many people is you have to take a human embryo and destroy it in the process of gaining these embryonic stem cells. Now, I have never, even though I find that ethically objectionable to do that, I have never wanted to make that illegal. I think, and most of these embryos come from these fertility clinics, and they are quote-unquote leftover embryos. If a mother and father have had the children they want, and if they have leftover embryos and they don't want to pay for the continuation of their maintenance and upkeep and they want to donate them to science, I don't think there should be any legal restrictions on that. And if it has all of the promise that the proponents say it has, then let the private sector step in and fund the research. You know, the Juvenile Diabetes Association raises over $100 million a year for research. The last time I asked them how much they were applying to embryonic stem cell research, it was like $400,000. And why should the federal government come in and fund this when a lot of people find it morally objectionable?
We're talking about embryonic stem cells and the decision or the issue of whether or not the president should relax federal policies restricting federal funding for embryonic stem cell research. Our number is 800-989-8255.
By the way, can I clarify one point?
Oh, Dr. Weldon, by all means.
When the president made his decision was not to destroy any more embryos. but he allows federal funding for research on the existing embryo cell lines. And I think Dr. Goldstein made this point earlier, and it really is the accurate point. The federal government is now funding this research. The debate that's going on right now, and that's what this letter is about, is we want to create more embryonic stem cell lines by exploiting more human embryos and then allow the federal dollars to be used on those cell lines. And that's really the debate that's going on.
But I want to be clear. The president suggested in his speech on August 9th that there would be some 60 lines or something like that, and in reality there have been far fewer, and that seems to be one of the concerns that scientists frequently raise.
Right, and that's because these embryonic stem cells, which people keep claiming have all this promise, it turns out they are genetically unstable. You have to grow them on mouse feeder cells, and as they duplicate over time, you start seeing genetic abnormalities showing up in them. The other big problem with these, and you got to remember, I'm a clinician, and I look for towards the future when you could have a clinical application of these things. The other big problem with them is they tend to form tumors when you put them in animals. And the other problem is if you are ever able to overcome all of those problems, if you had a problem and I wanted to use an embryonic stem cell in you rather than an adult stem cell from your own body, your body would reject that embryo stem cell because it's not a genetic match from you. It's basically from a donor. It's kind of like a cadaver donor. And so you got to overcome all of those issues for this to really have a clinical application. And a lot of people like me look at what's going on the other side of the fence, which is in the adult stem cells, where they're actually doing human clinical trials. I think the FDA just approved an adult stem cell clinical trial for cardiac disease just recently. That's being done in humans. The researchers haven't even overcome the technical problems on the embryonic side. And you know, you can do most of that research using animal models.
Right. Well, why don't we invite our listeners to join this conversation? Let's talk to Lynn in Palo Alto, California. Go ahead and welcome to the program, Lynn.
Hi, thanks for having me. I wanted to offer a patient's perspective. I have Parkinson's. I'm 42 years old, and I've had it for the last 10 years. And I just want to agree with most of the speakers today in the urgency here. It seems like we're tying researchers' hands behind their backs and blindfolding them and asking them to proceed forward. And I just can't urge strongly enough that this is really should be a medical discussion. And I wish we didn't even have to be having this political debate, because I'm fighting politics to live the rest of my life. And I want researchers in medicine to be pursuing the promise. I'm probably the most discouraged I've been since having this disease with the political quagmire we're in right now. I was wondering, can any of our speakers speak to whether you think a cure could be found for something like Parkinson's in 5 years, or is it going to be 10, which might be too long for me?
And thank you for the call. Congressman Weldon, I mean, you must have heard these kinds of questions before.
Yeah, I'd like to comment on that. There is one case, and it hasn't been published. It's a case report where a man has essentially been cured of his Parkinson's disease. He still has slightly mild symptoms using his adult stem cells. I think they used nasal cells, if I'm not mistaken. And so there is some real promise on the adult stem cell line as to whether or not embryonic stem cells would someday pose a better hope for Lynn. You know, my comment there is it possibly, but it's unlikely.
Right.
And, you know, I had an uncle I was very close with who died of complications of Parkinson's disease, and my own father died of complications of diabetes. And I read the medical literature and the scientific literature on this, and if I thought the embryo stem cells were such a great hope on the horizon like the proponents claim, you know, I would certainly be more open-minded to it, but I think it's very remote that these things would ever have any clinical application. And just let me reiterate for Lynn, I don't I don't ever want to make it illegal. I just feel, you know, the private sector...
Dr. Weldon, can you hang on 1 minute? I need to remind people that they're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Go right ahead. Sorry to interrupt.
The private sector actually spends more money than the federal government on all areas of research when you look at the entire investment from the private sector versus the entire investment from the federal government. And so there's nothing keeping private foundations from moving ahead on this if they felt that it had all the promise that the proponents claim it has. So.
Well, I don't want to make this into an argument between you and the scientific community, Dr. Weldon, but it does seem as if certainly there have been, where 5 years ago there was nothing, now there are hundreds, possibly thousands of scientific papers talking about the interest, and whether or not it's exactly leading to a cure, as you, I mean, you've raised what sound like very important issues to be resolved, but whether these lead to a cure or whether they're just an important area for researchers to study, it seems like that seems to be what they're asking for. And the president, as you say, didn't say no. He left the, I mean, it seems like I don't understand, a little bit is okay, but a lot is not good. I mean, it seemed like he was acknowledging that this was important by saying it could go forward some, and yet here people are saying we want it to go forward further, and you're saying, well, that's where you should stop.
No, I think what the president was actually doing was saying, I object to the destruction of human embryos for this kind of research, but these human embryos are already destroyed, and we have the cell lines. And if it has the promise that the proponents claim it has, then we ought to go ahead and fund research using these cell lines. And that's been going on now for 3 years, and I'm waiting to see the research showing that it has great promise, and I haven't seen it yet. And, Joe, I've made this offer repeatedly. I would be happy to debate a scientist on the science of this, but none of them will debate me. And I've been making this offer for years, and none of them will debate me. And that's because the science suggests that embryonic stem cells are unlikely to have any real potential in clinical applications. The science suggests the adults themselves are moving along very nicely.
Right. Well, maybe I'll ask Dr. Goldstein if he's ready to pick up the gauntlet, but at the moment I think I just have to say thank you for joining us today, Congressman Dave Weldon.
It's been great to be with you, Joe.
Congressman Bye-bye. Weldon is a Republican of Florida. He spoke to us from his office here in Washington. We've also been talking with Professor Larry Goldstein, Professor of Cellular and Molecular Medicine at the University of California, San Diego School of Medicine, and we've been talking about human embryonic stem cells. We'll continue the discussion after this break. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Joe Palca in Washington, sitting in for Neil Conan. This hour, we're talking about embryonic stem cells, the politics and the science, and we've been talking with Larry Goldstein. He's a professor of cellular and molecular medicine at the University of California, San Diego School of Medicine. And Dr. Goldstein, you're still with us, I hope.
Yes, I am, Joe.
Good. So we were just finishing the discussion with Congressman Weldon, where he threw down the gauntlet and challenged you or any other member of the scientific community to debate him. I won't hold you to this, of course, because it was a blind challenge, but would you ever care to have that debate, or do you think he's...
In a heartbeat.
Okay.
And as far as I know, I know of no members of the scientific community, and I know a great number of them who work on stem cells who are aware of this challenge from the congressman. So
okay. Maybe
he needs to advertise a little better.
All right. Well, we have programs here, so perhaps we can get you together sometime and have that discussion. Now let's go to the phones. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. And Craig in Columbia, South Carolina, you're on the line.
Hi, good afternoon. I think Dr. Weldon had some good points there about the source of funding. But I had a question for Dr. Goldstein. The stem cells that are being researched now for embryos, what about the stem cells that are in the umbilical cords of infants? I understand they're about the same thing. Why can't we use those?
So Craig has asked a good question about umbilical cord blood stem cells, and he's right. They're very interesting, but I would disagree with the point that they're the same as embryonic or pluripotent stem cells. They're more like cells from bone marrow. They can make, based on the literature thus far, blood cells, immune cells, but probably not a lot more than that. Again, they're very useful for those applications, but there's no demonstration that they have anywhere near the potential to make different cell types, as do the embryonic stem cells.
Okay, thank you.
Craig, thanks for that call. Let's go to Lulu. Lulu in Norwalk, Connecticut. You're on the line. Thanks for calling.
I'm here, yes. Thank you for taking my call, gentlemen. My question is, you were talking earlier about funding streams for the research, and I'm wondering how you expect the independent money that's coming from Harvard for this research is likely to impact the debate. Is private funding likely to make it more politically viable for the federal government to continue to deny funding, or do you forecast that positive results from that research will make it all the more important for the government to participate in the funding?
Dr. Goldstein.
Well, so Lulu has asked a political question, which is sort of a little hard for me to predict. But she's raised an issue I'd like to correct, which is although there is private funding and venture capital funding and pharmaceutical funding in these areas of research, there's nowhere near enough in the early stage research from private sources. Harvard's contributions will make a major impact on the science, but there's not. The public funding is the major source of the early stage funding when we try to figure out how to do things with these cells. Michael J. Fox made a good point the other night, which is that we're starting a journey of 1,000 miles, and we have to take the first steps. And I think it's a mistake for people like the congressman to say, well, we're not there yet, and you haven't demonstrated that we're there yet, so we're not even going to try to take the first steps vigorously. I think that's an enormous mistake scientifically.
But it's so interesting that scientists are ready to take this fight, even at this early stage. It seems like they must have a lot of confidence that they're willing to take on what's obviously a big political fight.
Well, I mean, that's a good point, Joe, and I think personally, I'd prefer to stay out of political fights and do my research. But if you ask me as a scientist, where am I prepared to put my time and energy to try to make breakthroughs, I think this is an important opportunity. In fact, let me give you two really important examples here. One is the very best, our top adult stem cell scientists in this country, such as Dr. Irv Weissman at Stanford, Dr. Rusty Gage at the Salk Institute, these experts on adult stem cells, they're the ones who are talking about the promise of the embryonic stem cells. And Dr. Weldon, Congressman Weldon, seems to have overlooked that. Second, I want to talk about a friend of mine, Doug Melton, who's a scientist at Harvard. Doug recently derived a whole bunch of new embryonic stem cell lines that are not eligible for federal funding because they were derived after August 9, 2001, although the embryos are now destroyed. Doug has switched his entire laboratory to work on pancreatic development and on diabetes because he has two children with juvenile diabetes. Now, Doug Melton is one of the great developmental biologists of our time. And I would think that if he really felt that embryonic stem cells were not useful, he would not be working on them. In fact, it's exactly the opposite. He has put himself heart and soul and scientifically into this area of research because he believes that it has the greatest potential to help cure his kids. And a lot of people share that opinion. Scientists share that opinion.
Okay. Lulu, and thank you very much for your call. Okay, I guess Lulu's gone. And Larry Goldstein, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joe.
Larry Goldstein is a professor of cellular and molecular medicine at the University of California, San Diego School of Medicine. He was with us from member station KPBS in San Diego.